If you are a small business owner, I'm sure sometimes you feel like you need a marketing degree just to successfully market your business. I'm here to tell you that is not the case if you use Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning platform has powerful marketing tools to make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more. In just a few clicks, you can launch a campaign that is tailored to your business and goals. Maybe you're launching a new product, or releasing a newsletter, or want to tell your customers about upcoming deals. Constant Contact can help with all of that. This includes email, SMS, social media, and so much more, all designed to be easy so you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track business growth. Plus, Constant Contact's award-winning customer service is there for guidance along the way to help you with things like customer lists, templates, and follow-ups. Get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day? Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius, and it's a special weekend edition of the LFR pod. I went to the first game I've gone to, believe it or not, in a little over 2 years. You know the starting lineup, D, the last time I went to a Laker game? It was Lakers versus Celtics. We kicked their ass. Our starting lineup, want to talk positional size, Russell Westbrook at the one, THT at the two, LeBron, AD, and Dwight. Just big MFs all around, right? And so I went to the game last night, and there is a magic in that building on days that are good. And it was a great game. Lakers pulled it out 123 to 122. But there's a magic inside that arena that our wonderful creative director, Jay Diaz, once told me that from his perspective, there's a timelessness about going to a Laker game where, like, even as much as the world can change outside of that building, like, the being inside, it seems very similar to the way that it was 20 years ago. And it was just a beautiful thing. I caught one of the tinsels that fall down from the ceiling when the Lakers win, got one of those. And it was just a wonderful night on the court. Lakers fought really hard. LeBron did not play. AD came out really good in the first quarter as a scorer, had a double digit first quarter. Lakers were down like 30 to 27. Then they put up 40 in that second quarter, really strong second quarter. And then it was nip and tuck for most of the second half. And yeah, a fourth quarter where D'Angelo Russell scores 21 points, including game winner, ends up with 44 points, 9 assists. Spencer Dinwiddie gets a game-winning block on Damian Lillard, showcasing some of the great defense that he's played. Like I said, D, I was in the arena, and it's a totally different perspective on what you see and what you don't see versus being on TV. So curious your thoughts on a great game against the Bucks.
This is where I'd love to sort of bounce ideas off of Mike. Mike gets a day off today. Mike is always working. He's been quite busy with Laker stuff. He's been doing South Bay stuff too. And so if you ever get a chance, check Mike out, doing other stuff besides just sideline reporting stuff, because I really love his coverage in other places as well.
And he's in his he's got 6 games in 7 nights. And I think this may be the one like off day. So rest up, Mike.
Totally. So Mike's the Lakers sideline reporter, which is always funny to me. When I went to the Lakers Warriors game, me and Mike were up there talking like in the media section where I sit. Mike is much lower to the ground at the Warriors arena, because the Warriors set him up nice. And that's a great thing about the Warriors. But me and Mike are just sitting there chopping it up. And a fan walks by and he's just like, oh my God, Mike Trudell. Yeah. And like, he said the funniest line, because he said, this is like meeting LeBron. To me, he was just like, it's not quite LeBron, right? But he's just like, it's LeBron and it is you. Like, I'm like, can I get a picture? This is that, the other. He's just like, I'm going to be showing my people. It was just great, right? Because Mike's famous.
Yes, being out in public with him, that man's the Queen of England, basically, right? Like, everybody wants to, and he's so gracious with everybody. He's just the nicest guy. I appreciate how he treats the fans.
Anyway, so I bring this up because we don't go to games like that. And so our perspective is almost always filtered through the television lens or going back and rewatching. So it's always interesting the things you catch when you're in person that you see versus the things that you see live. On TV, the thing that stood out to me most about this game, beyond all the brilliant shot making from D'Lo and all the sort of fight that the team showed, which was evident, was just the level of care and the level of like control that the team played with over the course of the game and their ability to sort of thwart every Bucks run or never get rattled when the Bucks were just in it.
And when they went down six, when Dame got that 4-point play, that seemed like one of them classic Dame daggers through the heart. It really did. And they bounced, like they didn't hang their heads. They just kept playing through it. Man, I love that you brought this up. There was a resilience that hasn't always been there for this team.
So it's funny, right? Because this is like some inside baseball and behind the scenes stuff, but Pete's phone was dead. And so like normally
I had 119 text messages when I turned my phone on.
So we're on the text thread normally all during the game and we're all chatting back and forth from our various perspectives, right? And Mike's giving us a skinny on what's happening in the arena. And Pete and I are talking about the things that we're seeing from like the TV perspective, right? But last night, it's just me and Mike going back and forth, back and forth. And so Pete missed a bunch of messages where I was sort of clamoring for Jackson Hayes to come back into the game because I was, AD's shoulder was bothering him late, right? He had tried to take a charge in the open court and Giannis got him pretty good with an elbow, like right in the shoulder area. And it looked like AD got a stinger, maybe something more than that. He's being evaluated and we don't have a lot of updates around that yet, but he was out there dragging his arm around and Rui was playing hard, but he was not shooting the ball well. And I did not think he was rebounding especially well against a pretty big Bucks front line. And so I had sent Mike some lineup data stuff with a little bit more than half of the fourth quarter left. And I had said just something to watch for. AD and Hayes are a +2 or a +3 when on the court together. I think they were +3 at that time. And AD and Rui were a -2. And they were a -2 after D'Lo had hit a 3. And so really they were -5. And then D'Lo had just hit a 3. And then it was a timeout. And I said to Mike, knowing me, I'm saying, I think this game is over. Because after the 4-point play where they're up now 6 and there's a 1:52 left. And I said, I really want to see Hayes here instead of Rui. Rui's 4-for-15, I think. And knowing my luck, though, as I'm clamoring for Rui to go to the bench, he's going to do something important.
And he did.
And he did. He hit a key 3 to drop the deficit back to just 3. And he had that great backline contest on that Dame layup attempt that's the defensive stop that's going to get lost in the ether of the story of the game is the Lakers are, what's the score at that point? They're still down 3 at that point. Is that right?
Is this the one where they subbed Cam and Jackson in at that point to get the defensive stop? I think
so they're
down 1 at that point. Right. I was so happy to see a defense to offense substitution. By the way, we have been letting those situations fly by, but it was like, yes, take D'Lo and Austin out and put Cam and Jackson in if all you need to do is get a stop.
And so that's the play that no one's going to talk about that play because D'Lo hits a game winner and then Dinwiddie gets like a game sealing block against Damian Lillard. So no one is going to talk about the stop that led to the ability for the Lakers to actually score the go-ahead basket and then get the game winning stop. But Rui was critical on a couple of late game possessions where his offense just came around. And he didn't have a great shooting night. He had taken advantage of a couple of switches earlier during the game, but he had had 4 baskets to that point, and I think 3 of them were layups. And like every jumper he shot was like especially flat, rattling in and out, back heeling. It's just like, oh, it's just not his night.
It's one of those nights, yep.
And then he came through. And the thing I thought about everyone who played, I think the Lakers only played 8 players.
Like, oh, did they?
LeBron didn't play. Well, off the bench, Max played, but he played
very sparingly, yeah.
He came in for a few possessions.
Right, so it was essentially the starting 5 and then And they started Dinwiddie in LeBron's place. That was actually my favorite rotation in terms of the guys coming in and out. Like seeing Hayes come in the back half of the first quarter. We'll talk about stuff like that more down the line. But like that was in terms of who should be coming in and when. I thought that was one of the best games of the season.
Yeah. And so that defense to offense switch there, both Cam and Hayes they served important roles on that possession as well. And so the Bucks ran this possession to get a switch with AD and Dame, or not to get the switch, but they brought AD in to the action and then the Lakers switched. And so it's AD now isolated on Dame, and Dame got the angle driving left on AD and he beat him. And so Rui and Cam actually on the back line had done this little exchange where it was going to be Cam as low man because Rui was the weak side corner. And then Giannis ended up in the dunker spot. And so what ended up happening was you see it, Rui motions to Cam and says, let me slide over. You've now got corner responsibility and I will be low man on the help rotation. And so that then leaves Cam to box out Giannis as Rui goes up to challenge the shot. And so Cam is in there trying to scrap with Giannis, and Giannis is about to swoop in and basically get this rebound. And Jackson Hayes comes
soaring above everyone
and just like basically tries to grab the rebound, but doesn't, taps it away. And it goes right into AD's hands, who then circled back to recover after Dame got by him. And it was just this moment, Pete, of like collective size being on the court in order to do the one thing they needed to do.
Yes.
To get really like the most critical stop in the game was obviously Dinwiddie's stop. But without this play, Giannis probably gets that rebound.
Gets fouled. If that's an and one, the game's over, you know?
Well, also too, it's just like he probably gets fouled, takes 15 seconds to shoot his free throws and makes them both.
We were saying vile things to him when he was at the free throw line.
Oh, man. Me and Mike were texting back and forth, and I texted Mike, and I said, 11.43 seconds, like on that last free throw attempt. And then he responded, LOL, I just timed it too, right? And so we were both on like the same page at that second. Let's take a break here, and when we come back, I want to dive back into D'Angelo Russell, if we can, just for a little bit.
Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never frozen meal is chef crafted, dietitian approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. You'll have over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled. What are you waiting for? They are ready to heat and eat, so there's no prepping, cooking, or cleanup needed. It's also flexible for your schedule. Get as much or as little as you need by choosing your meals every week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. Factor is the perfect solution if you're looking for fast, premium options with no cooking required. Head to factormeals.com/LakerFilm50 and use code LakerFilm50 to get 50% off. That's code LakerFilm50 at factormeals.com/LakerFilm50.
I want to dive back into D'Angelo Russell, maybe for the rest of this podcast. That man had 44 points and 9 assists, 21-point fourth quarter. So when I got hired by the Lakers, it felt sort of like a fan winning a sweepstakes or something. You know how they'll do like inside, right? This is like, to me, my whole work experience is I'm also still a Laker fan. And so it's like I get this crazy insider access type of thing where I could talk to certain people. And one of the things I wanted to know when I got the job and when I started being around the team, just more even from a media perspective, was like, what happened with D'Lo? You remember, D, we've been doing this since 2016, where of the young core, way back in the young core era, D'Lo was my guy. D'Lo was the guy that I really gravitated towards.
Oh, you've got the epic D'Lo rant. Go back in the go back in the archives. Long time listeners know.
That was at LFR Live back in the day. Those were fun. D'Lo was my guy. Lefty point guard, this just brilliant, like can see things. And he was also a scapegoat at that time too. And I'm always going to defend those guys when I see that. And So I wanted to know just kind of what the real story was about that. And just from what I heard, kind of the impression I came away from hearing several stories was just like, there was a level of immaturity and sort of a lack of consideration for others. And there's a Lakers thing where, and this is, again, this is what I try to push back against. And it's not just a Lakers thing, but it's like, if things go wrong, we got to find one person where it's like, it was you. It's because you were this way. And the whole energy vampire thing with Russ, get the hell out of here. That guy plays with energy every game, right? So this is a thing, the scapegoating thing. And so D'Lo was that, and I was already fond of him. So I was like, hell no, I'm going to defend this dude whenever I can, you know, like, but from getting kind of the real stories of what was going on, I was like, I get it. I could get how somebody like that would be grating to be around. Fast forward several years to where he is now. He just turned 28 years old. And to see the journey that he's gone on, we'll talk about on the court in a moment, but just I've said this several times, but he takes so much joy in the successes of others. And he really looks out for other people in a way that is in a lot of ways counter to what his reputation was when he was younger. And to see him become the man that he has become, and I don't know him, right? I don't want to act like I'm, you know, that we're best friends or anything, but just to see him grow as a person. And then this year on the basketball court, he's scoring 23 a game over the last 25 games, shooting 46% from three over the last 25 games. That is not a small sample. And he had a great quote after the game last night, saying, you know, public humiliation has done nothing but mold me into the killer that I am today. And he was that against the Bucks. He had his first bad game in a minute against the Kings, but he was unbelievable just throughout that game. And so talk to me about what you saw from the TV perspective on D'Lo.
I wrote about this after the game because I didn't know LeBron wasn't going to play when I put my preview together. He was questionable and he had said, like, I'll be okay. Right. And so I was thinking, okay, well, LeBron's just going to play and he's going to gut through it. And he wasn't able to go. And so after the game, I wrote, someone was going to need to step up from the perimeter players as a scorer. And just someone was going to need to take control of the game. And D'Lo answered that call. And he answered it in a major way, I thought. Again, I'm going to go back to a point I made in the first part of the pod. The thing that stood out to me about D'Lo was his poise and his control and his understanding of how to tilt the game in the Lakers' favor by organizing the team and making sure that everyone was on the same page. And so D'Lo was a human run stopper in a lot of ways. Every single time the game got to 1 point or 2 points. So neither team led by double digits in this game. The Lakers' biggest lead was 9. The Bucks' biggest lead was 6.
Yeah.
Which they had in with a minute and 52 seconds left in the game.
It was such a good game. Just so really competitive game.
And so there wasn't actually also too like a lot of back and forth. Like the Lakers led for a huge portion of that game. And one of the reasons why they led for such a huge portion was because of D'Angelo Russell. He was the one orchestrating good possessions. And it wasn't just the shot making. He was getting to spots on the floor. He was working the Lakers' actions. And his little partnership with Jackson Hayes was giving the Bucks a ton of problems, Pete. And so he must have hit Hayes for 2 or 3 like easy shots around the basket where Hayes was just getting fouled. He had that great pass to Hayes where it was a Hayes and AD lineup, and D'Lo ran a pick and roll with AD. And they ran a stack or a Spain pick and roll. And AD saw the lob and he's calling for it. He like put up the Randy Moss hand and he called for the lob. And D'Lo sort of like held it for a beat. And I was just like, oh, he missed AD there. And then Hayes comes streaking down the left baseline and D'Lo shoves it off to him and Hayes gets on that trampoline, that one leg liftoff, and then he gets that baseline dunk. And all night, Pete, I thought the way that D'Lo was controlling possessions and really like, I am the floor general here. That's what stood out to me from a viewing perspective from TV. It's just like, oh, they don't have LeBron? It's fine. They've got this dude tonight, who is just commandeering everything and took the reins and just controlled the game for the Lakers in a way where obviously they don't win without him. He scored all of those points. But as great as the shot making was, my lasting memory of him was just the utter control that he had during the game.
I love that you're focusing on the control. And he's, from watching him as a 19-year-old to this point, it's difficult for somebody who's very young in an NBA environment to be the smartest player on the court or one of the smartest players on the court, right? And so if that's kind of your archetype, which it is with D'Lo, it's not something where he's the most athletic or anything like that. It's his skills and his ability to read the game. And so those type of guys, remember Steve Nash as a young player? It's funny, we talk about Steve Nash now, and obviously he's a Hall of Famer, but he was like, it was like 5-6 years as a backup. He wasn't a guy that if you would have said at some point of his career, oh yeah, this guy is going to be a Hall of Famer, it would have sounded crazy. But there is a certain level of mastery on the mental side of the game that just comes with age and experience. And he's at that point in his career where he sees everything coming so much faster than some other guys that it really allows him to do some things even aside from the shot making and the incredible ability to go 9-for-12 like he did and score 21 points in a quarter. Even putting that aside, the understanding of like, okay, this is happening, that means I need to do this or the ball needs to go here. That corner cut from Jackson Hayes was a great example. One of probably the main argument against a Hayes and AD combo is neither of them can shoot threes, and that's problematic. But corner cuts are a way to alleviate that, right? And it'd be easier to show this on video, but basically, if you have a guy that has Jackson Hayes' type of dunking ability, that's just, you know, two steps away from a dunk at any given point, even if they can't shoot threes, there is a certain amount of just dive to the rim. They either have to tag you or if they don't, if it's a dunk, if they do, it's just a skip pass to another shooter who's a corner on the wing for a three. And so D'Lo sort of setting up these situations. And in that post-game interview, he was talking about getting the smartest guys on the team in the room and talking through different scenarios and all of that. There's that level of mastery that he has now that can only come with reps and experience that you're just never going to see out of a 19, 20-year-old.
Yeah, it's also super interesting. I remember his quotes last year, Pete, about how he was sort of bristling in post-game media sessions when reporters would talk to him about being the team's point guard.
Oh, yes.
And he would push back a lot. He's like, I'm not the team's point guard. I'm a basketball player. That's not my ask here this season. And it wasn't. They had Dennis Schroeder and they had LeBron James. And those guys took on the bulk of the ball handling and a lot of like in possession decision making, really. And his growth back into being like a real point guard for this year's team, I think, has been one of the key developments this season that hasn't been discussed a lot as why the team has been so stable with him on the court and why he's been one of the team's best plus minus players. He is a guy who has been an organizing force and a floor raiser for this team, which is not typically how you would describe D'Angelo Russell. Mm-hmm. You would normally describe him as a ceiling raiser and in some ways a floor lower.
Yeah.
Right? Because when he was having his really bad stretch in December, it was just like, oh man, the team's really struggling. And when he's playing poorly, the bottom is falling out of like of this team. But when he reaches his heights, it's like, oh my God, like, look at this team. But for the majority of this season, Pete, he's been the guy that has uplifted the Lakers whenever he's been on the court. And that's reflective in almost all the quote unquote advanced stats when you talk. And these aren't even advanced stats. It's like the team's better when he's on the court. Look at his plus minus. Look at his net rating. It's like he's among the team's best.
Yeah. And that stabilizing nature of his game. It's funny when you point out the December stretch and when the bottom falls out on him, it falls out on the entire team. And within that, it's not a matter of like, get D'Lo off the floor. We've got some other guy on the bench that can step into that role and cover that. It's like, D'Lo is the guy that does that on this team, unless LeBron is locked in and, you know, fully engaged and looking to put his foot on the gas in ways that we don't want him to over the course of 82 all the time. And so That's why it's a matter of like D'Lo is the only guy who can do this. Austin's got a little bit of it, but that overall mastery of point guard, the position, like talk to me a little bit about what that means, D, about that idea of playing the point guard position and what is the difference between having that level of control versus not, especially in a younger player.
Well, let's go to break here. And when we come back, we will get into that a little bit more.
With Father's Day right around the corner, what do you give to the man who has everything? Easy. You give him an experience he'll never forget. You give him Omaha Steaks, because a world-class dad deserves a world-class steak. The Father's Day experts at Omaha Steaks have made it easy to put a smile on the big guy's face this summer with hand-selected gift packages starting at just $89. Just go to omahasteaks.com and use the promo code BLUEWIRE at checkout for an additional discount when you shop gourmet gift packages for Father's Day. With Omaha Steaks, the possibilities are endless. Endless flavor, endless variety, and endless value. Truly, they have perfected more than just steak. Your dad is guaranteed to love every bite. Go to omahasteaks.com. Use the promo code BLUEWIRE to get an exclusive savings. Shop for unforgettable gifts that are guaranteed to make Dad's Day. Because if there's one thing that Omaha Steaks knows, it's that dads want steak. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BLUEWIRE at checkout to save on exclusive packages starting at just $89.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. Win. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
So this is hard to like explain. Honestly, it's like you have it or you don't. To me, You and I grew up watching like Magic Johnson.
Yeah.
And I think that he is the epitome of being this ultimate control guard while also having all of this like external flash and flair that probably overwhelms the idea that he is controlling the game and has a mastery of the game that goes well beyond what the highlights are. Magic's understanding of where players are going to be and how to get them the ball when and where, that idea of pace and timing and understanding of the relationship between when was the last time you even touched the ball? How often do you need the ball?
Where do you like it?
Mm-hmm. All of that stuff. These are ingredients in point guard play that I think are a requisite for being able to be like a really good point guard. These are also skills that I feel like have eroded over the years amongst a lot of players. And that if you go back to the 80s and 90s, the league was littered with guys who were brought up to play a
Avery Johnson
way.
Types. You don't really have that kind of guy in the league anymore.
Or even guys like the Rod Stricklands and Kenny Andersons
Andre
of the
Miller,
world.
Yeah.
Like even guys like Doc Rivers, who grew up playing point guard. There's this understanding of I got to get my guys involved. I have to see the bigger picture. The idea of moving your teammates around like pieces on a chessboard and trying to make sure that the game went in your direction. It's why point guards were often leaders. There's an element of that. This is honestly why I think D'Lo hasn't had the best reputation around the league, is that how can you be both that player and be the player who people think isn't mature? Mm. Or people think who isn't a leader.
Right.
Right.
Those two things are antithetical. Yeah.
Remember when, I can't remember what podcast it was on, but D'Lo had talked about the thing that really hurt him when he left the Lakers was when the Lakers drafted Lonzo Ball and D'Lo was still around. It was like,
We traded D'Lo two, 3 days before.
But I'm saying the idea was when they drafted Lonzo, but the language around drafting Lonzo was we needed a leader.
Yes. And D'Lo's talked about sort of Magic's comments as he left, right? And the impact of that on his career. Yeah.
That's my point about this, is that D'Lo was clearly not looked at in that way. And the other night when D'Lo hit that crazy three against Jalen Williams, like the play that went viral where he like hit the crazy pull up and he had passed the ball to LeBron, and then LeBron gave him like
shoot the ball.
The most like audacious look, like, this ain't my turn, buddy. It's your turn again. You're going back for not seconds. You're going back for thirds at this point. That trust that LeBron was showing in D'Lo there, that's an understanding of not only like you're hot, but I trust you with the ball in this instance. This is a point I wanted to transition to in general about point guard play. This was a super important game, I think, as another showing that this dude can perform when the ask starts to go up. And to me, I think it's important for D'Lo specifically to have a game like this, because LeBron and AD trust Austin Reeves. LeBron trusts AD. AD trusts LeBron. They both trust Austin. Besides that, give guys the truth serum. And how many other guys are they going to say, like, we trust you with the ball to do the thing that needs to get done, like with the ball, right? They may trust someone else to make a shot or to do whatever, but do we trust you with the ball? And I think D'Lo showing over really this whole stretch, like since the calendar year turned, that you can give me the ball and I'm going to do the right thing and I'm going to play well for the most part, I think has been critical for where the Lakers are going to go if they're going to go anywhere. And maybe this is the folly of like, oh, well, if you have to depend on D'Angelo Russell, you're going to like, there's still going to be an element of that from outside observers, but he is proving himself over and over again in ways that, again, to me, go beyond the shot making.
That whole idea of trust and benefit of the doubt is one of the ways that I frame this. I was sending you guys that Gordon Ramsay meme a ton earlier in the year, of which is basically just about the whole idea of the benefit of the doubt, the you donkey versus, ah, you precious, you know, sweet child. Like, that's D'Lo is, through some of his own doing for sure, looked at with very little benefit of the doubt. And so even in the contracts that were handed out this past year, right? And even in just sort of the presentation, it was like, we got Austin back, we got Rui back, and D'Lo signed a contract that we're probably going to trade him. Right? You would say it's like sort of like afterthought type of thing where, and even D'Lo said that coming up to the trade deadline, where he was like, just look at my contract. I'm obviously the guy that they would look to trade within that. Then he has the bad December. And so, and he already doesn't have a benefit of the doubt. So to go from that to a game like last night in that period of time, there's a level of resilience and having been through the fire that D'Lo was talking about in his comments about public humiliation, where you just got to keep your head up and keep working through it, right? Like, you're that, but that ability to overcome adversity, I think, is one of those things that you develop with experience over time, and your experiences really mold your capacity to do that. And so D'Lo's ability to do that, we talk about the things he can't do in the playoffs and things like that. If that is something you can build and change. And so with his game specifically, we already always make it this big morality play. Can you trust him? Can you depend on him? Can he? It's really just big athletes with speed that really bother him if you can ball pressure him. And he's not the first smaller guard that D'Lo, what he's providing relative to his salary, to his expectations, to all of that, man, it's really like one of the best parts of the season.
Well, we talked about this in the lead up to the trade deadline and why, like, I think if you would have pulled us on Christmas Day about whether or not we would have traded D'Angelo Russell this season, I think if you would have given us the truth serum, we would have been like, well, it depends for who, obviously, but the value play there seemed to tilt in the favor of you could probably get someone who you want with D'Lo's salary, because D'Lo's playing about to his salary level. As we got closer to the trade deadline, and he had such a strong stretch in January, that value play had reversed. It was just like, you're actually not going to get a player making $18 million or $20 million who is providing more value to you on that deal than D'Angelo Russell. And it's like one of the classic ideas that has come up a bunch over the last 18 months is the fact that the Lakers pretty clearly could have had Mike Conley instead of D'Angelo Russell when they made the trade. The Lakers looped in the Timberwolves into the deal with the Jazz to route Conley to Minnesota and send D'Lo to the Lakers. And different times, Conley is the steady vet, and I think that his steadiness could have helped the Lakers in a lot of different ways over the last 18 months. But the ceiling that Russell has as this younger player who has made an all-star game, who has these sorts of nights in him like he had against the Bucks, these are the types of nights that Conley can no longer give you. And if you've been watching the Wolves lately, there's been a lot of like, it really is Ant and Cat. And now that Cat is out with his meniscus injury, that secondary scorer, it's like they've been needing more from Conley, and Conley hasn't necessarily been that level of guy that he can be. Now the Wolves are still winning, and the Lakers are actually have a tough game against Minnesota Sunday, and we'll see how like how this goes. That this is going to be another opportunity, I think, for D'Lo to prove his worth, or to show that like whatever gains that we've been talking about are quote unquote real, I think they're real regardless of how well he does or does not play against Minnesota, just so we're clear. But centering things back on D'Lo, Pete, the combination of his maturity and his understanding and his high level of skill are things that are irreplaceable on this specific version of the Lakers. And I, for one, am just thrilled that, like, more for him, that he has been able to come out of the other side Hell yeah. of this looking like the player that when you say that, like, when he was a young guy and a rookie, this was the ideal.
I remember arguing with people on LakersGround.net in like 2016 that I was like, I think D'Lo is going to be like a one or two time all-star, and his ideal place is going to be as a third type of guy next to two superstars. And so seeing that kind of come to fruition now, we're a 10th seed or a 9th seed at this point, right? But I think D'Lo has filled that role fairly admirably at this point. So it's been very cool to see.
There was a guy who used to contribute to Forum Blue and Gold. His name was Reed.
Reed. Shout out to Reed. I used to talk to Reed all the time. Yeah.
He wrote this great piece in the aftermath of the 2010 championship about Kobe that you can go and read. And just the Lakers and the Celtics and a little takedown of Bill Simmons to a certain extent. It was great stuff. But D'Lo was always Reed's guy. And we had a lot of debates about who the Lakers should draft that season that D'Lo came out. D'Lo was the guy where Reed was on me, man. He was always just like, I think this guy can be a centerpiece of a high-level offense, the shot-making, the decision-making, the passing. It's all there for him. And once it all clicks, it wasn't a if it all clicks. Once it all clicks, like, he's going to be a guy who could get you 20 points while shooting 40% from three and get you 8 or 9 assists on any given night, just controlling the flow of the game. And I'm not saying that I was skeptical, but those are leaps that you're taking when you're looking at the round face,
sure,
the baby faced guy that was there. And then obviously he provided a bunch of moments during the young part of his career, the ice in his veins stuff, like summer league and all of the stuff that he did. And I think that there's still a large portion of Lakers fans that will never forget the support that they had for him. And they locked onto him as someone that they would have loved to have seen succeed regardless of where he went. And now that it's come full circle for him and he's back with the team and he's playing well, and there's a level of introspection and understanding and maturity that goes along with all of the skills that he always had that were inherent part of his game. It's just a beautiful thing to see. And it culminated last night, Pete, in a 44.9 assist masterclass, honestly, against a team that had really had one of the top one or two defenses in the league over the last 15 games. And had challenges to throw at him, and he put them in the mixer.
It's a beautiful thing to watch.
Whatever they threw at him, he had a solution. It's a
beautiful thing to watch. And I had so much fun at that game last night. Like I said, if you ever get a chance to go to a Laker game, not all of them are like that, but when they're good, there's a magic in that building that just can't get anywhere else. It was just super cool to be a part of. Go Lakers. Let's see if we can bounce back. That was a huge shot in the arm they really needed. The roller coaster continues on Sunday against the Timberwolves. We could very well be a lamenting podcast on Monday, right? Again, it's been one of those seasons. So, but today we're happy, had a blast. We will be back on Monday to discuss. Until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Ainge has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
And Magic got it. Magic fires. It's in. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound of Lonnie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Done.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane, back for Gasol, pretty pass, and it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant, picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two, one,
miss it!
Bryant! Unbelievable. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant. Yes! And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.